evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Thursday, February 27, 2025. Communities in Western Equatorial State say journalists are being targeted.
The Union of Journalists of South Sudan Western Equatoria branch calls for an immediate investigation into this incident. We demand that the responsible, if found guilty of unethical conduct, be brought to trial.
And authorities in Upper Nile State are fighting cholera and insecurity.
They have run out of the supply of the cholera kit. There's no even ORS, regular care clinic. And even within the warning fire, there are also two people also referred to a coma.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UK ambassador to the United Nations, Barbara Woodward, told the UN Security Council Wednesday that the situation in Sudan is not changing. She said the respect for Sudan's sovereignty and territorial integrity is vital for a sustainable end to the conflict in the country.
Nearly 2 years since the start of this war, and once again, I cannot fail to be struck by the reports of death and destruction. More violence. More families ripped apart, more children starving. Last month, my foreign secretary visited Ardrey and heard firsthand about the suffering faced by women, the suffering of sexual violence, of rape, of hunger, who had fled the conflict. It does not need to be this way. The parties to the conflict can take actions now to end the suffering. And I'd like to highlight three priorities. First, we urge the parties to end their military ambitions and focus on creating the conditions for peace, including through full cooperation with UN and African Union mediation efforts.
The UK diplomat urged both parties in the conflict to facilitate unimpeded access to humanitarian relief to people in need in Sudan, adding that the decision by the Sudan Armed Forces to keep Adre border crossing open is welcomed.
Both parties must facilitate the rapid and unimpeded passage of humanitarian relief to people in need. The decision by the Sudanese armed forces to keep the Ardre border crossing open is welcome. But with over 30 million people in humanitarian need, it is simply not enough. We urge the SAF to open Ardre permanently and authorize the use of further regional border crossings. We call on both sides to lift unnecessary bureaucratic impediments which are delaying aid deliveries by weeks, and to provide humanitarian actors with security guarantees to operate safely.
The representatives of the Office of the United Nations Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, told the UN Security Council members that the warring parties in Sudan must respect aid agencies offering support to the people who are trapped inside the country.
More than 12 million people displaced, including 3.4 million people who have fled across Sudan's borders. More than half of the country, 24.6 million people, experiencing acute hunger. A collapse of health services, millions of traumatized children cut off from formal education, relentless patterns of sexual violence. And in several parts of the country, the already catastrophic situation of civilians has also actually worsened since our last briefing to this council less than 1 month ago.
The acting U.S. representative to the UN, John Kelly, says Sudan's conflict poses security risks to the countries neighboring Sudan. He says the warring parties and their supporters should silence the guns.
The ongoing war in Sudan is catastrophic and the cause of the world's largest humanitarian crisis. Its continued escalation is a threat to the stability and security of the region and beyond. The United States is focused on resolving this crisis. We cannot let Sudan again become a permissive environment for terrorist and transnational criminal organizations. This would further undermine our shared interests and security in the Red Sea region. Massive refugee flows in the region are putting intense pressure on the economies and internal security of those countries hosting refugees. The United States continues to call on Sudan's warring parties to cease hostilities, allow unhindered humanitarian access, and protect civilians. We've made clear to both sides our interest is the restoration of peace and an end to the conflict. Both belligerents have committed atrocities, and the perpetrators must be held accountable. All warring parties must protect civilians and allow unhindered humanitarian access. We are gravely concerned with the RSF's ongoing attacks on the Zamzam IDP camp in northern Darfur and reports militias allied with the SAF are using civilians as human shields. We have urged the RSF to end its attacks, its attacks on displaced civilians in Zamzam, and urged the SAF to ensure civilians and humanitarian workers can move freely in and out of Zamzam. External support to the warring parties only serves to prolong the conflict.
Kelly told the members of the UN Security Council that there is no military solution to the conflict in Sudan, adding that the parties should seek peaceful means to end the conflict.
We support the restoration of civilian governance in a peaceful, unified Sudan. In this regard, we support efforts to promote a civilian political dialogue to foster a political process. Attempts by the RSF and aligned actors to establish a government in RSF-controlled territory in Sudan are unhelpful for the cause of peace and security in Sudan and risks a de facto partition of the country. This brutal conflict has caused the world's largest humanitarian catastrophe, leaving over 630,000 Sudanese experiencing the worst famine in Sudan's recent history, over 30 million people in need of humanitarian assistance, 12.5 million people displaced, and tens of thousands dead. For this reason, the warring parties should facilitate the flow of aid across all border and cross-line routes to all parts of Sudan. The humanitarian suffering in Sudan demonstrates the importance of a swift and durable negotiated end to the conflict.
Al-Hadi Idris Al-Hadi Muhammad, Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations, told the Security Council his country is determined to open humanitarian corridors for assistance to reach affected families in Sudan. Speaking through an interpreter, Mohammed told the UN Security Council his country stands ready to cooperate with the international community.
The war has killed the bureaucracy, and we want the humanitarian system to reach the persons who need it. And we support humanitarian action while it respects the principles of humanitarian action. And we have designated airports in several areas for air transport of humanitarian assistance. And there is a significant increase from 2 to 9 crossings. And we have also added the Adri crossing, which was renewed for the second time in a row a few days ago. And we have committed to the protection of civilians since the beginning of the aggression. And we have emphasized our commitment to the Jeddah Declaration to protect civilians, and we have also recommitted to humanitarian law.
That's Ati Idris Ati Muhammad, Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations, briefing the UN Security Council on Wednesday in New York. The Union of Journalists of South Sudan is calling on authorities in Western Equatorial State to investigate an arson attack at one journalist's house and the robbery of another journalist. The union says it fears its members are being targeted for attack. For VOA News, Mattia Samuelti Mateo reports from Yambio.
Emmanuel Mandela is the secretary for Western Equatorial State Union of Journalists. He says the union is concerned that some of its members have been targeted by unidentified individuals.
The Union of Journalists of South Sudan, Western Equatoria branch calls for an immediate investigation into this incident. We demand that the responsible, if found guilty of unethical conduct, be brought to trial in a court of law. The unlawful destruction of journalists' homes, the targeting of their lives and the confiscation of their personal belongings are not only violation of ethical journalism, but also serious breaches of the fundamental rights of the press. And we are urging the individuals who might be behind this, in case this journal did something to you, go and report them, or either come and report to the umbrella of the journalists. We can find and follow up what happened exactly.
Alex Yabis, a journalist working for Catholic Radio Anisa FM, he says he lost everything when the assailants set houses ablaze. No one was injured because the family was not at home that evening.
A total of 7 houses were burnt down. Before the burning of our houses, a few days before, 4 men came to our home. These 4 men were carrying guns. Some of them were carrying big knives. They threatened our brothers not to shout. They entered inside. They got away with mattresses, solars, and other valuable things. We reported the case to police, but up to now, no investigation or no any update from the police about what happened before the burning of the houses.
Sukoya Jackson, a journalist who works for state-owned radio station, he says unknown individuals wearing military uniforms came to his house at 8 p.m. and ordered him at a gunpoint to sit down.
The first thing they told me is, let me hand over the phone to them. I should open the password. Now they were on stepping on my head and holding the gun into my ears. So as a journalist, it is a bit challenging for us to do our work in such kind of a government system whereby you have very many a party. So my colleagues at the authorities should take a look into it. When the soldiers, they are giving order to soldiers to do a night patrol or anything, they should at least aware them of also the community.
The journalists say the attackers did not say anything about their work as reporters. Samuel Ted Machar is the acting police commissioner of Western Equatoria State. He says his office is not aware about such incidents and urges people to report such attacks.
To the journalists, we did not even get any information. What we can tell public, and we can assure the public, that if anything happened, please, if you did not report at that time that the case is happened or the incident happened, and then you come in the morning to report to the police. Police can document it and you open the case, and then police can also follow up the case. There will be action to be taken, because if they found somebody, we can put an investigation and then we send it to the court, we send it to the law.
Jackson says he did not report the attack at his home because he thought nothing could be done. The South Sudan Union of Journalists in Juba has urged authorities to investigate the incidents and work to protect journalists in Yambio. Civil society organizations in the state have said recently has been an increase of attacks and looting in Yambio County, raising alarm among local communities. For VOA News, I am Mattia Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatoria State Capital, Yambio.
Still on media issues in Kenya, more and more audiences are consuming news via social media. The digital shift is changing the media landscape, with startups like Tuko emerging as a leader in fast-paced news for younger audiences. For VOA, Victoria Amunga meets the team to hear how they balance responsible journalism with the needs of the digital age.
In a busy newsroom in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, journalists at the digital media group Tuko put their skills to work. Tuko, which means we are in Swahili, started in 2015 and now boasts more than 30 million platform users each month. Walter Masolo Mabonga heads Tuko's editorial department of politics and current affairs. 57 young journalists work here. The 29-year-old says the speed with which the team gets content out is helping the outlet to thrive and edge out traditional media.
It is very swift in terms of proving stories and publishing. We don't have a lot of bureaucracy of stages like in the mostly in the mainstream media. There are a lot of, you know, gatekeeping.
Tuko is part of a wider digital shift. A Reuters Institute digital news report finds that in Kenya, 89% of news is now consumed online, and social media experienced the biggest increase, with 77% of people now getting news via those platforms. Tuko staff say audience trust their media outlet. Ruby Orina is the public relations manager at Tuko.
We're always interacting on social media, and we also have a very strong social media team that is always monitoring what's going on. And while we are listening to Kenyans and we're giving them this platform, we also do a lot of verification so that before a story runs there, it's not just a story for sensationalism, it's a story with facts.
Facts are important in the move to fast-paced digital news. The International Center for Journalists say that social media has enabled mis- and disinformation to spread more quickly and widely. But regulating digital platforms is tough, say Kenyan authorities. The Media Council of Kenya, a government body, says it can be hard to know who's running a site. Dina Ondari is the manager of research and monitoring at the Media Council of Kenya.
There are platforms that have mushroomed. Some of them, their ownership cannot even be established because of the nature of digital media. And therefore, it becomes difficult for regulators to identify who is behind these platforms.
As digital media expands, young journalists are seeing more job opportunities in a highly competitive industry, say officials with the Africa Digital Media Group. Mukui Mbindio is head of partnerships at the Africa Digital Media Group.
Someone who might have needed a whole news crew to be able to go out and tell a story can now do it on their phone. Even, you know, editing a story, there's, you know, new tools and software now to edit stories. There's even the proliferation of AI.
Media experts say combining traditional media standards with new digital tools will help sustain the Kenyan media. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in Upper Nile State are battling cholera and insecurity. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Health workers in Nasir County of Upper Nile State say they have run out of cholera kits. Authorities say the disease is ravaging the area in overcrowded conditions in displaced persons' camps. And there is also an ongoing clash between the South Sudan Army and members of a vigilante group known as the White Army. At least 14 people have died from the cholera since an outbreak last week. That's according to officials in the area. Mamer Abraham Kwart has more for VOA from Malakal.
On October 28th last year, South Sudan's Ministry of Health declared a cholera outbreak in Reng, Upper Nile State. A number of factors contributed to the outbreak, including cross-border transmission from Sudan, lack of proper wash services, flooding, and displacement. Nasir County authorities reported cholera cases last week. Lamlul, Relief and Rehabilitation Commission's coordinator for the county, says aside from the 14 death scores of other patients are in critical condition.
We have outbreak of cholera. Especially for those who are in Nasir, for those who are in this year also, in this side, 100 cases. This case is reached up to 14.
Beni Kwajen, acting Nasir County Health Director and Upper Nile States Director of Monitoring and Evaluation, says the number of cases is rising. He says clashes between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the White Army this month caused significant displacement of civilians and crowded conditions.
Cholera also increasing in Delta of the riverside. These people, they were congested because we did not turn the civilian, especially the children and the mother, they have even run to the death side because of the dead injury that happened last week. They came to Jingme, they came to the other side. Even also, it was last week that the commissioner also request the humanitarian also to respond.
Kwajen says the county has run out of cholera kits and basic drugs for treating the disease, adding that it does not have the capacity to vaccinate people in Nasir and other counties.
They have run out of the supply of the cholera kits. There is no even ORS, regular kit finish. And even within the one in Payam, there are also two people also referred to Akoba from Kerpayam. One person died last week. Also, one person also reported to Akoba. We have a micro plan that we can vaccinate only the Pinyakan County, but currently, up to now, we have not even reached Pinyakan County.
As of February 11th this year, 29,304 suspected cholera cases were reported, with 501 deaths and a case fatality rate of 1.5% across South Sudan. A report by the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies says children were the most affected. For VOA News, I am Amir Abraham Kord, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
Nigeria's National Counterterrorism Center warns that terrorist groups are targeting more sophisticated, using new technologies and exploiting political and economic grievances to expand their operations. In response, authorities have launched a review of national anti-terrorism strategy to address emerging threats. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The official anti-terror strategy document was first developed in 2014 and revised 2 years later. Authorities say this latest revision is necessary to reflect evolving security threats and ensure counterterrorism measures remain effective. Major General Adamu Garba Laka is the national coordinator of the Counterterrorism Center.
The tactics used by non-state actors keep evolving and are becoming highly unpredictable. Nigeria is grappling with the challenges of insecurity. Thanks to the efforts made by the personnel and agencies in charge of securing the lives of citizens, which has ensured a decline in the number of such incidences.
The review comes 3 months after Nigerian authorities warned that a new terror group, Lakurawa, has emerged in the northwest region. Authorities say terrorist organizations are increasingly using advanced technology such as encrypted messaging apps, social media recruitment campaigns, and drones to enhance their operations. They also exploit poverty, political grievances, and weak law enforcement in remote areas to recruit fighters and spread their ideology. Laka said the updated strategy will redefine the roles of various government agencies involved in counterterrorism efforts. For well over a decade, Nigeria has struggled to curb violence from terrorist groups, including Boko Haram and its offshoot, the Islamic State West Africa Province, ISWAP. Since 2009, more than 35,000 people have been killed and at least 2 million displaced. Although the overall number of terrorism-related deaths has declined in recent years, threats persist due to persistent poverty and poor governance. Security analyst Chidi Omeja says the increase in sophistication of terror groups is not surprising.
I don't see it as something, you know, something that we didn't expect. That's the reality of the emerging security. You know, a terror group that have this link with terror networks. So, you know, they would naturally grow in capacity. They grow in, you know, in these proficiencies. So it's up to us you know, to devise, you know, mean to counter those technologies they are using.
Last month, terrorists attacked a military base near Nigeria's border with Niger, killing 20 soldiers. Security analyst Ebenezer Oyetakin argues that beyond reviewing counter-terrorism strategies, authorities need to uncover terrorism financiers.
When you take a look at the operation of Al-Qaeda and you compare it with ISIS, the way they move on in their convoy, and then you compare it with Boko Haram in Nigeria and ISIS West Africa, you will see the resemblance, which means they are too dynamic. They are not just some bunch of illiterates that are trying to make ends meet. So we should look for those who are behind them rather than contending with policies and policies that are not sincerely being implemented.
Africa has become the global epicenter of terrorism, accounting for the highest number of terror-related deaths in 2023. Last April, Nigeria hosted the African Counterterrorism Summit, bringing together hundreds of experts and policymakers to develop a continent-wide strategy against terror groups. But for now, Nigerian authorities say their focus remains on strengthening the country's resilience against terrorism. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, February 27, 2025. We now leave you with Oliver Mtukudzi and the song Todi. Listening to Oliver Mtukudzi and the song Todi. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Nelson Lopez, we wish you a lovely evening. Don't forget to log on to www.voaafrica.com for more programs that you must have missed.
Todi, what shall we